When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Hey, Throners, welcome to our podcast. I'm Mr. Blog.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Grace.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 15.
Bum, bum, bum.
Well, everybody, welcome back to Game of Microphones. The dawn of season 6 is upon us. And we thought it would be a great idea before we get kicked into season 6 coverage on Game of Microphones here that we would do a quick little recap of our top 3 moments of season 5, as well as our hopes for what we are looking forward to in season 6. Now, of course, today I am joined by Jason and Grace. How are you guys doing?
Hey, good. Doing great.
I think this is sort of like a little appetizer, like a highlight reel to kind of get wet your appetite for season 6. And I saw a couple of previews that looked so good, so I'm really ready for it.
I have honestly managed to avoid almost all of the previews or any trailers or anything. I've seen little bits here and there, but I'm getting really excited. And part of that is because I've been blacked out a bit. So I'm looking forward to what's to come. And largely because, Grace, I'm sure you're excited about this as well. We're kind of done with the books, you know, so it's going to be all new to us.
Yes. I'm very excited about that.
No more smugness.
No, the smugness will be gone. So we're just going to be regular old, plain old viewers.
There is some bits and pieces, though, right? And you'll always have certain insights, I would think, because those books are so complex that I bet you you'll still have the upper hand.
Perhaps, but
but I think they're changing enough. I think they're changing enough too, especially towards the end, where that might not happen quite so much. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we have some info about that in our news. So before we get started, I'm going to lay out what we got coming up in this quick episode. This will be a shorter episode than normal, of course. But we are going to cover our top 3 highlights of season 5. We have some news that's going to lead us up to season 6. We do have a few emails and comments to talk about. And, of course, our hopes for season 6. Now, I will say stick around to the very end because there have been a lot of changes to the structure of how Game of Microphones is going to work in the future. It's not going to be exactly the way we did this last season, so stay tuned for that. And I want to just briefly take this moment to say, we know you have a lot of Game of Thrones podcasts that you could be listening to, so thank you for flying. Wait, no, not flying. You're not flying. Thank you for listening to Game of Microphones.
To fasten your seatbelt, insert.
Exactly. In the event of a water landing, your seat can be used as a flotation device. I've kind of always wanted to be a flight. I almost considered being a flight attendant once and then realized I was too tall.
Yeah. Cramped.
Yeah. No, you can't do it. They have a height minimum and maximum, and I was too tall to be a flight attendant. Go figure. So, guys, shall we go ahead and kick into our top 3 of season 5
Let's
of Game of Thrones?
It.
All right, we're kicking right into this. Jason, since you're going to be on Game of Microphones the least this season,
again, I get to go first.
You get to go first. Do it, man.
Thanks. All right, let's see. Well, like I said, this is kind of a highlights reel. Game of Thrones is so dense, I couldn't encompass a whole season in 3 points. But when I started thinking back on season 5, there were definitely a few things that really stood out. Oh yeah, this is what first comes to mind. One of which, number 3, is Tyrion and like Tyrion team-ups. There were some really good Tyrion team ups. First, the one that I most wanted to see, even maybe it wasn't the most entertaining of all these, but Tyrion and Daenerys.
Yeah, you've been waiting for a while for that.
Yeah, or, I mean, mostly not even just that specifically, but for Daenerys' story to hook up with the main story. But I was really happy it was Tyrion because I love him, and I liked how he was sort of a reluctant hero, but he came to have hope in her. He said, "I had given up on life until Varys convinced me you might be worth living for. If you chop off my head, well, my final days were interesting." So I also just like the attitude of his, of, you know, he's like a reluctant hero. He's going to try to do his best, but he's always got that sort of, well, you know, whatever happens.
There was a recent study or an article I read about the question of who actually is the protagonist of Game of Thrones. You know, ever since Ned Stark's death, we haven't really had a very clear cut protagonist, you know, and
well, it's Jon Snow. Oh, wait. don't say it's Tyrion. Don't say it's Tyrion.
Well, this article actually did it's basically Tyrion.
That means he's
probably probably the best as being the protagonist.
Yeah.
That's a great number three.
I think Tyrion has always wanted to do what's right or.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the decks have been stacked against him for so long that he's reverted to, you know, drinking and whoring and being okay with that.
Drinking.
And because he, I mean, when he had the opportunity, he really stepped up. But then everything in what was it, season four, everything just went all for hell. Shit. Yeah. Went, and so he was locked in a box and, you know.
His shit box. Well,
that was wonderful.
Oh, if Oberyn just didn't.
Yeah.
Wasn't so cocky. You know,
Tyrion could be in a very different
place. It would be such a different thing if it wasn't for that. And that's, you know, that's really the beauty of this show is that everything would be so different if it weren't for
little
very particular moments. Yeah. Just fuck everything up.
I mean, but thank God because we got some great story out of it, even though it was completely heartbreaking to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gross.
I'll just go through these other ones quickly.
please.
Tyrion and Varys were great together.
They were great. Oh, yeah.
Really funny. And I loved that Varys had such faith in Tyrion. He said, "You have your father's instincts for politics and you have compassion," which is very true. And he really had to prop Tyrion up. I still don't feel like Tyrion fully has taken that on, but he kind of has to now, especially with Daenerys flown off to Dothrakiville. And then the last one was Tyrion and Jorah, who I thought were awesome. The thing that really stood out to me about them is I really liked both of those characters. And it's like when you have two friends that you know both of them really well and you really want them to meet and like each other, and then they meet and they don't like each other. And you're like, no, you just need to get to know each other.
So oh, that's
it
awesome.
Felt like that. But
like two classic grumps.
Yeah.
You know, I love it.
Long sullen silences and the occasional punch in the face, the more popular day. And while I'm on Tyrion, I'll say one more thing. One of my favorite lines was when he was came upon that slaver. I think it was played by Mr. Echo, right?
Yes.
And he said, "How will the cock merchant know it's a dwarf cock?" Because he wanted to take cock. And Savior said, "It will be a dwarf sized cock." And Tyrion says, "Guess again."
Yeah, that was great.
So that,
I mean, that's great. He always injects the you know, perfect humor in those moments. So.
Always.
He is an extraordinarily well-written character.
Why I love him.
Yeah. And yes. We are, you know, I dare I use the word blessed to have Peter Dinklage as our team.
Very much so. And it was really good, maybe especially this last season, to see him have some real dramatic moments reaching the bottom of the barrel too. So his character is funny, but it's also very deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Grace, what is your number three?
Okay. My number three is I put Stannis's rise and downfall. And ooh, I put that one on here, not only because it was such a joy to see Stannis fail so hard, but also because they got me. the writers. You know, I felt, you know, I had never been a fan of Stannis, but through the whole Shireen story, they almost kind of redeemed his character for me. And I think I fell for it. And to watch him turn around and do the most horrible thing imaginable, you know, to kill his own child and to feel that hate. And I think I liked him because they got me, and he was, at the end, he was fun to hate, and you wanted to see him go down, and to, for him to be there bleeding against the tree and to realize that, yeah, he's going to die. He's not the one to be on the throne. I mean, it was just, it was so satisfying to watch that, because, well, partly because I wanted him to be good, but mostly because, you know, he was just so bad. He knew he deserved that, or, you know, or we all thought he deserved the end he got. And I don't know. I just thought it was extremely satisfying and, you know, emotionally just heart-wrenching to watch all of that too. So
yeah, because season 5, he really did reach his peak, and he most certainly dropped to his lowest point. Indeed. As well. So
it's been a real ride with him. At first, yeah, I thought he was weak and slimy, and then I started to think, he's got a depth and a strength to him. And then the moment with his daughter at, I think it was Castle Rock, right? The really touching moment. Castle Black. That was so touching. And I almost, that's one place where I feel kind of manipulated by the writing, because I'm like, the only reason why they had that is to,
because they knew where they were going. Okay with it, though, because
But it really got me, because any of those father, daughter or son moments, they really, really get to me in any kind of entertainment. And so then to turn it around and have him do that, I was like, fuck this. That's where Karen quit.
I know. Yeah, we lost a host over that. So obviously it hit hard.
It's funny you'd mention that, Jason. And I mean, I've cried at The Simpsons. Anytime there's a Homer and Lisa moment, they've had some beautiful moments. I'll get all weepy. Oh my Lord. And Game of Thrones has done that a number of times. I mean, good gravy. We had season 5, you had the death of Myrcella and Jaime being right there for it. And it's like, oh my God, here's the guy who could never even acknowledge that this was his daughter, and he had to be there as she died.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's so hard, you know.
They did have a moment where
there was the acknowledgement,
right?
Yeah. Yes. Right before she died.
Yeah.
Might be the only good scene in all of Dorne, all of the Dorne scenes. That might be the only redeeming scene.
Oh, what you mean in terms of the quality of how they handled Dorne? They did kind of botch the whole Dorne.
That was totally botched for me, but that was a good
jail cell where what's his name?
Bronn.
Yeah, Bronn was flirting with one of the girls.
That part was fine. That part was fine. And if she wants to get nude as much as she seemed to be into it, I'm cool with that. But it was pretty badly botched for sure. I have a feeling there's almost nothing in Dorne that's going to make our top three for season 5. I don't know. But that's a great number 3. Thank you, Grace. Mine slightly mirrors Jason's a bit. But you guys are going a little more broad. I definitely went very specific. And my number 3 was Tyrion and Jorah's journey through Valyria.
Yeah, awesome.
And when we saw those stone men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the most riveting, terrifying, kind of visually interesting moments that we'd seen in this series ever. You know, and then going back the next day or a couple days later and looking through Reddit, and all people had taken screen caps as they were going into that region. And you see tens of stone men like on the rocks looking at them. And you didn't see them when you watched it the first time.
That's awesome.
Then you watch it again. And you're like, oh my God, they're all there. So it really, to me, that combined a lot of some of the best moments of what Game of Thrones offers, which is this wonderful fantasy world coupled with visually stunning things.
You know,
it just really worked.
That is good. That I don't think it really registered with me before, that they would go to so much effort to put all those stone men everywhere and not just shove it right in your face. So it's something to be discovered by the more intelligent fans or whatever, the more observant fans.
Well, and that's just it, that there's a a real love and care given to this series that I think a lot of other TV shows maybe fall a little short of. Mm-hmm. But this one, you know, production value is way up there.
Yeah, it's a money thing too.
Yeah,
it is. But
this season is the highest budget, about $10 million per episode. So $100 million
total. Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, when you have $100 million to throw at a season, that makes a huge difference. You know, you can put tens of stone men that you'll never see unless you take screen caps.
Yes, so, exactly.
But that is wonderful. And yes, such a well-done scene, not only for the dialogue and what was going on before it happened, but just to the terror when they're just like dropping down. And it really seemed, I was actually worried. You know, I was worried for our characters a big time.
Well, Jorah, you should be worried for Jorah because he is now infected with grayscale. So here's a whole other... That scene introduces an entire new chapter of Jorah's story as well. Mm-hmm. And
because this is the first time we've seen grayscale like in present time, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Shireen had it as a child. But
it was cured. It was over with. It's not active. It's not active. She's fine. She's not going to succumb to...
Well, not anymore. She's...
Well, she's very dead right now.
Very dead now.
Yeah, not from grayscale.
Not from grayscale. From her father. Yeah.
Yeah. And because fire. It's supposed to be very contagious, so not only is Jorah, you know, his life is in danger, but how many people is he endangering by keeping this hidden? Yeah. Ooh,
good point.
Scary stuff.
I don't know. So that's my number three, a very specific moment.
Ah, but I love that
moment going through Valyria, Stone Man. I was just in awe of that scene, and I loved it. So, Jason, your number two.
My number two is a pretty specific moment, too. It was one of my favorite moments in the whole series so far. I don't know if you could call it a moment. It was more like a 20-minute moment. Do you know what I'm going to say?
Heart home.
Yeah.
It
was amazing.
It was amazing.
Yes. It was all the more amazing because it came
there were
so
giants
late.
Stomping.
Yes. Oh, I love those giants. And I love their costumes.
Yeah.
They're so unique.
Didn't we even have mammoths? Oh, the mammoths was at the wall. No, that's a different scene.
That was an amazing scene too. But just that we had to wait, you know, the White Walkers have always been really intriguing to me, and we got a huge battle with all of their minion whites, with them standing like lieutenants around this bluff. And it was so, eerie and chilling. And then they came down and just totally started kicking ass and turning, other people into whites. And it was the way that was done was just so great. And then, yeah, turning the tide against them until they had to escape to sea. And then that final scene with Jon Snow looking on at the king or whatever, the leader guy.
I think the most terrifying thing about the whole thing for me was, come at me. But I think the most terrifying thing for me was that, you know, all the people that John and company lost were now recruits, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was just terrifying to see them wake up as whites and be reanimated, you know, as soldiers, basically. And your loss is our gain kind of thing for the White Walkers. But
I can't remember the actress's name, but she was one of those people who ended up becoming
the one that was in Pitch Perfect.
The one that was in Pitch Perfect too. Exactly. She is amazing. And she blew me away in that. I was so bummed out that she died.
We did get to see her
become a White Walker. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was amazing. Her sweat smells like cinnamon. Oh wait, no, that's Pitch Perfect too. Never mind.
There's one thing about the White Walkers that I was thinking about today that, you know, according to lore, they came thousands of years ago during the Long Night and tried to take over, but then they were defeated and driven back north, and then the wall was erected to keep them out.
Yeah.
And I wish there was some indication somehow of why they're much stronger now, because we already know that they were defeated once. So I want
to
know.
Well, I think it has to do with the seasons too, because that we've had a long summer.
But the time that they came was generation long winter. So I think it was the longest winter that they know of during that first attack. know
right,
what I mean?
But you're so saying, like, but they're coming back now, I think, because winter is coming. I don't know. That's what I see.
And, right. I don't wonder why they're coming back now so much as I just want to feel like they're a bigger threat, because all we know about them right now, aside from what we've seen, which has been awesome, but what we know is that they were already defeated once. So right. I just think that it would be cool if, you know, if they somehow, it was apparent that they had grown in power somehow or something like that.
I see that. But I think in general, like, the magic is coming back to the world. Yeah. I think the magic in across the board has sort of been lost. Like the dragons, there were no dragons.
If they had said like, I think maybe it was, I don't remember for sure, but the dragons were what helped drive them off. And now we don't have the dragons. Something
that's
like
very
that.
Much what
right?
it was.
Yeah.
It was
okay. That's good.
Them off.
That's
cool. So I think what is happening with this very long summer is that there's the anticipation that there will be a very long winter because of that. And now with the reintroduction of magic into the world between the dragons and what's happening up north of the wall, I think so much of this entire show series in general boils down to the, you know, while the powers that be are infighting and doing all this stupid shit, they're completely blind to the real dangers
threat.
That
yeah.
are happening and the bigger threat. Right. And the ones who are in power are the most blind. So it's
so people are stupider now.
No. I don't think it's that.
I think it's been so long that they've forgotten.
Yeah.
It's become an old wives' tale. It's become
a
thousand years.
I don't want to feel like I know for sure, even though it seems pretty obvious, but that I know for sure that we're going to be able to drive them back this time like they did before or their ancestors did.
Well, I think all the hope for that is going to reside in those three living dragons.
Yeah.
And who may be riding those three. I mean, the dragon has three heads. You know, we need to have three riders. And that, of course, is a huge piece of the puzzle of A Song of Ice and Fire is who are the three worthy to ride these dragons. And it's always been assumed that they must be Targaryen. So we know of one for sure.
And she's ridden already.
And she's already ridden one. Actually, we finally got to see that.
Yes, that was another amazing thing.
Absolutely. So, you know, a lot of questions as to who are the other two, but we won't get into that. Gets into spoiler territory, gets into speculation territory, but I can't wait.
Yes, exciting stuff.
And Hardhome, my God, we could go on and on and on and on about how amazing that was.
But really, they could not have done it better.
No, they really couldn't have. And what was so great about that was episode 8, and we've become so accustomed over 4 seasons of knowing that the big episode is going to be episode 9. Right? They pulled a fast one on us. They made it. You know, episode 9 was big. That was a big one. That was the death of Shireen.
A big downer.
It was a big downer. And it came off of probably the best episode the series has ever had. You know, I mean, that Battle of Hardhome was magnificent from beginning to end. Perfectly paced.
I watched it like 4 times.
Cool. But it was perfectly paced. It was vibrant. It was alive. No pun intended on that. But it was just very, God, it was so good. That's how action is done. That's how a battle is done.
The sounds were great. And the fight with Jon Snow sort of engaging with one of the White Walkers, actually mostly just trying to run away, but having a couple of parries and blows in
there. The moment that Longclaw hits the...
Yes.
That's right.
He shatters.
What's his name again? Oh my God. The Night's King. Yeah, when his sword and Longclaw meet, oh my God! You know, then the look on his face—not John's face, but the other dude's face—of like,
yeah, huh?
Oh shit! Wait, this can't happen. What's going on? You know, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. So great number 2. Thank you, Jason. Grace, what's your number 2?
Okay. Well, my number 2 is The House of Black and White and Arya.
Oh, fantastic.
And as a book reader, and I hate to bring that up in a way, but, you know, I've been really looking forward to this. But I think they just did such a great job with her storyline, and it was so poignant. And it was so hard, because Arya's always been one of my favorite characters in the book and in the show. And, but yet she, you know, she is so stubborn, so these lessons are hard for her to learn. And
yeah.
I don't know, I just loved every bit of it, and how, I mean, just from her sitting on the steps of the House in Black and White for days, and how they incorporated Jack and Hagar in back into it was wonderful. And I was super excited as a fan to see that actor back again. Yes. But every in her struggles with, you know, she cannot put aside Arya Stark, you know, in where that has brought her, you know, she stole a face and murdered a man, you know, revenge killed.
Yeah, it's Meryn Trent, though.
Yes, I
that
know.
Bastard
he
kills
deserved
Syrio
it.
Pharrell.
I know. He deserved so, yes. it. But, you know, she was supposed to become nobody. And I don't know. Just the whole struggle for me was just a joy to watch. And because, you know, she's our little hero. But, you know, she's not perfect. And I like that. And I like to watch her struggle. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
And that's the beauty of, again, of Game of Thrones in general, or A Song of Ice and Fire in general, is the last hero that I'd say we really had who maybe wasn't that flawed died at the end of season one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And since then, all we've had are remarkably flawed heroes.
And his flaw still was, that's was why being still too alive. Innocent and pure.
Yeah.
His nobility was yeah. his flaw. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And,
that's why he's dead.
Although I refuse to consider that a flaw. I really do.
Even if it kills you.
Even if it kills you. You know what? We can look back and we go like, look, man, you look at Ned Stark. He was the one decent man in this entire continent, man. So I don't know. I still love me some
yeah.
Ned Stark.
Oh, yeah. How can you
Tyrion,
not?
Tyrion might be just the right combination of savvy and yet still compassionate.
Exactly. Exactly. That is a great. I'm really. We'll get into this for our hopes. But yeah. I can't wait to see where Arya's story goes. And I loved everything at the House of Black.
Me too. And I really liked that actor, how he handled the unique speech. You know, a girl this, a girl that. He did.
Yeah.
He made it sound so intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
There is something very cool about that actor, isn't it? There's something about Jaqen H'ghar that's just.
But I think that the, and I hate that I don't know his name, and I think it's kind of a long, complicated name. But,
yeah, I don't know what it is either, yeah.
I think he owned it so much, and that's why they kept him around, not just for us to recognize him, because I think they could have done it another way. I mean.
Right. Could have had anybody.
And,
well,
and I was
book,
so
is,
sad at the end.
Somebody totally different.
When he walked off, I was like, oh my God, we're never going to see him again, because I had read the books and I knew. We didn't see his face again. And so to see that actor back was a joy. Because he owns that role or that non-role or whatever it is, you know, since he's nobody. But
Tom, this last name is spelled Walaschiha.
Yeah, I knew it was there.
Walaschiha.
I was just looking it up as well. Yeah. And I'm like, what is that? You say? W. Yeah. Walaschiha. Fuck.
Yeah. And we already, you know.
Walaschiha. Oh, fuck that. Jaqen H'ghar is even, that's hard and that's easier than that guy's last name. He's cool, whoever he is.
The thing about Arya never quite losing herself, it's a paradox. It's a catch 22 because she went there to learn how to enact her revenge, and in order to do that she has to let go of it.
Right.
But if you truly let go of it, but I think that's sort of very Zen. I mean, those kind of paradoxes are integrated into those kind of spiritual Zen Buddhist practices.
Sure. And exactly. And it's interesting to watch, but it, you know, is her revenge really necessary? I mean, is it going to serve her? So, you know, I guess we'll see. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that
well,
later.
Well, I mean, but here's a kid, you know, think about her journey that she's been on, going back to season one when she's been on the run this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she witnessed the murder of her father, and that's the last time that she's kind of been seen, right, was during that. And then she's disappeared, and she traveled for how long with Sandor Clegane, of all people? You know, and what would that do to a person? You know, just
yeah. I'm not saying her revenge isn't justified, nor you know, is she not damaged. I can completely understand her stubbornness and you know, what this is what's kept her alive is, or all these skills and this, you know, a great many of them she's having to give up.
Well, and Jason, I like that you brought up the Buddhist thing about losing oneself, you know, yet at the same time, there's almost like a, as you said, like this contradiction of ideas of, you know, in many ways, in order to lose yourself, you have to actually understand yourself in order to lose
get closer you know. To it.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that's the exact journey that Arya is on right now, is having to ditch that which she believes that she is to finally discover who she truly is. It's a great, House of Black and White is one of my favorite chunks of the story because it's so,
it's deep,
separate. It's deep, but it's also very, very separate from the rest of the story, from all the machinations going on politically and all this other kind of stuff.
It's a very personal story, thing. I think.
Yeah. And I think that's what we as viewers or readers really latch onto with Arya, is that she is going through this journey. And we want to see how it ends. We're rooting for her, you know. What about that laugh that she gave when she and the Hound arrived at the Eyrie? Is what, that's season 4 maybe, or was that 5? I don't even remember anymore. But that laugh at the futility of all of this. It's like, no, Lysa's dead. Like, you got to be fucking kidding me, you know.
yeah, that was season great. 4.
That was season 4, but that to me sums up Arya so very well. It's like, yeah, this is the girl that will laugh at the worst possible sort of
situation. Because what else can you do? She sees it. She's, you know, exactly. She's learned that. Well, what else can you do? Oh my God.
She
know?
Sees the futility of all of it. And that's a great number two. My number two, speaking of futility and mirroring your number 3, Grace, was the death of Stannis and his entire family. Well, you know, first he burns his daughter, then his wife hangs herself, and then he dies at the hand of Brienne during a failed battle. You know, and that entire battle, that last one with Stannis, where Ramsay's troops come and wipe out all of, you know, surreptitiously in the middle of the night, wiping out all of Stannis's troops and all their horses and all this and that. Again, as you very eloquently pointed out, bringing him to his lowest point.
Which is, as much as I hated Stannis, that was also hard to watch because the Boltons are even worse. Well, I don't know if they're worse, but they're a different kind of worse.
Come on, they're a different kind of bad. No. They are. Look, you don't want either of them to win. That's a horrible thing. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not going to justify that. But the Boltons are the lowest of the low. I mean, they are the you know, slugs scrape Boltons off of their shoes. You know what I mean? But Stannis Baratheon, until he burned his daughter alive, was a very noble man. You know, he
burned a lot of people in the beginning that we were able to forget about and forgive, maybe.
But the thing was, he is the one person that actually did have the right to be king. He genuinely was king, you know, so it's a little messy in that because we were rooting for Stannis the Manus to take all these people out. And then he burns his daughter and he lost all support from all viewers, from anybody who cared about him. So when he finally died, he even did so nobly, as far as I'm concerned. He was still a badass till
the end.
But
off camera, the poor guy didn't even get an on-camera death if he is dead, but I think
I think at that point, and I know people are still going, no, he didn't die, we didn't see it.
I think he's dead, but, you know, it's like,
at the hand of Brienne.
It was kind of satisfying because it's like Stannis didn't even earn an on-camera death. He was so bad.
But now, even in the current cultural sort of thing, so now let's look at it this way as a fun little tweak thing. So, Captain Phasma killed the father of Nick from Fear of the Walking Dead. So I'm just throwing that out there. That's the way that really
that's how it all fits together.
It's all how it fits together. I just made a Star Wars and Walking Dead connection to Game of Thrones. That's very awesome. So there we go. That's Bravo. My number two. You kind of already covered it in our number three. Jason, drum roll, please.
So wait. So wait, talk about this some more. What I don't get about Melisandre is she told Stannis that he needed to kill his daughter as a sacrifice to the Lord of Light. I guess, I think to gain power and favor for the upcoming
King's
battle.
Blood. Yeah, he needed to kill. They needed to sacrifice King's blood.
And then immediately his wife hanged herself and half of his men deserted, I think, with supplies. So he went into the battle underprepared, totally lost, and then got killed. So what does that say about her? Is she a delusional fraud? I don't think she knew that was going to happen.
No, I think she was betting on the wrong horse. She was betting on the wrong horse that he's not genuinely the king.
But I think... I think in a way it worked, and they needed that snow to melt, but not for Stannis to, you know, to be victorious, but so she could get back to the wall.
Yep.
I think that's the real reason that the snow needed to melt. No, that's not how she interpreted it. She did not interpret it correctly. I don't think she. Mm-hmm. I think she was right in that they needed to make a sacrifice. I hate to say that. But for a different reason than she knew.
Well, and there was a sacrifice, and she's going to go and take care of that when she goes back, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that she's feeling that way, or is she doubting herself? Doesn't seem like she is, right?
Well, I think maybe on the journey back to the wall, maybe she was a little doubtful, but I think as soon as she sees Jon Snow, deadish, dead, that maybe she'll... Or maybe she sort of felt her purpose on the way back there. I don't know. But that can't have been super easy for her confidence.
We'll see.
I don't know.
The first episode back is called The Red Woman. So maybe.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I think there's going to be a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. There is. I think we can talk about this somewhat open. Well, there is one thing in the books that was largely omitted from the show, and it kind of came up a little bit with Thoros of Myr, if you go back a little bit, with Beric Dondarrion, and how Beric Dondarrion was dead, but he kept coming back to life because of Thoros of Myr.
Mm-hmm.
And a big chunk of that is, look, R'hllor, of all the gods in this world, R'hllor is the one god that keeps actually showing up and doing shit. You know, he actually does stuff, and part of that is bringing dead people back to life. So this is the huge question mark, of course, with Jon Snow and Melisandre being nearby. And this is a wonderful thing. Jason, maybe you don't even know this. This is where the last book ended, was the stabbing of Jon Snow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We have no clue what's going to happen with that. And I'm really excited about this because, yes, we all are hoping and or assuming that Melisandre will come and somehow or another bring Jon Snow back to life in one way or another. Because I'm pretty sure he's pretty damn dead.
See, I would be equally unsurprised if, you know, I know a lot of people think what you're saying is what might happen, but maybe he'll just become a White Walker.
It's possible.
It could go either way.
Mm-hmm. but on the other side of things, I mean, we have seen somewhat resurrections there. We had the mountain at the end of last season, at the end of season five.
Well, is that, I mean, do you...
It's not the same way, but we have seen the dead kind of come back to life.
Did they say anything about Robert Strong, just out of curiosity? I don't remember. Did they mention Robert Strong, or do you just assume that's the mountain?
Well,
I don't think anybody knows for
because
sure that that's
visually,
the mountain.
Nobody. We have to know that's the mountain because visually, you cannot. He's the only huge man. Like that's something you cannot do in television, but you can do in books. You can't hide that kind of fact. I don't think anyone didn't think that was him.
And that's all Qyburn. Now Qyburn, you've got a whole other set of weird going on with.
True,
Qyburn,
but we know resurrection exists. So it's not an impossibility in this world.
True, true. Okay. Did the show go over? I mean, was Beric Dondarrion coming back to life in the show?
He was, but that was a few seasons ago. So I think if you don't remember it, then I'm certain that a lot of listeners don't remember.
Well,
so.
there was talk of it.
Yes, it was.
Okay, there was talk of it. Good. Thank you.
In conversation. Yeah.
Because really, my brain gets very muddled at this point between the show and the books. And now we're dealing with 6 years or 5 years worth of material. Mm-hmm. So it's I'm not sure what showed up in the show versus what I remember reading. The Beric Dondarrion stuff was a lot bigger and it had a much more of an impact on the whole arc than it is in the show right now. due to another character who was brought back to life, who has not come back to life in the show, so I'm not going to say anything. Grace knows who I'm talking about. Listeners who've read the books, you know exactly who I'm talking about as well. Jason, you probably don't.
It's that chick that died at the Red Wedding.
Okay, so you do know, but cool. The chick that died at the Red Wedding. Yes,
there are many chicks.
Whatever, we'll leave it at that. I don't want us to get angry.
I think
emails
we're probably pissing a lot of people off with this last 10 minutes of conversation.
Such is life.
Some people.
Jason, what is your number one? Let's get past this.
Well, it's not any more comfortable because number one, the number one thing that comes up for me when I think about the season is how much harder it was to talk about Game of Thrones than I thought it was going to be. Not that it was like a chore, but yes. it was not just the obvious thing, which is the scene with Sansa and
the rape
Ramsay,
of Sansa,
where he forces himself on her. But just in general, the issues that come up, because, you know, my main podcast is The Walking Dead Cast, and there are definitely moral quandaries that come up on this show, but it has a little bit more of a purity and simplicity and not quite as, not even near as complex, I would say. This show has a lot of uncomfortable situations, and rape is really common. There's humiliation and shame and incest and child killing and abuses of power and all these different things that, for one thing, might actually touch on experiences that people listening have had, you know, even indirectly or directly. And so talking about it, I feel like I'm used to being able to joke around a whole lot on my other podcast, and I can on this one too. And even the show is really funny. We talked about Tyrion already, but I also realized, oh man, I got to be really careful and really think this stuff through and not be too light about some of the things that are very important to people. So it was interesting. You know, it made me actually think about some of these issues more deeply than I normally would have. And it was good. It ended up being good. And also, you know, the way we talked about that scene got some people feeling really offended, and they came back and told us, and I engaged every one of them, and every one of them, we ended up having respectful conversations. So I felt really good about that, even though it was hard. But it was just hard doing the podcast too. It was a history. It was like studying up for a history test before each episode.
It's a huge undertaking, especially like the whole book, all the book talk. And I mean, there's so many characters. It's such a depth to the show and the history in the books. And
And I didn't want to mess up and say the wrong thing, you know, give wrong facts, but it was really rewarding too. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much people realize this, but this might be the only episode of Gamer Microphones that I'm going to be on this year. And part of the reason for that is because it was so hard, but I'm also feeling sad that I'm going to be missing out too. And I have been ever since I decided. I mean, it's also because it crosses over with Fear the Walking Dead and I can't do two Sunday shows, but, I'm feeling like FOMO right now, big time. I'm also feeling relief too. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to just sit back and enjoy this as a fan and not have to.
No, look, you and I were on that very difficult episode 6.
Yeah.
And
Karen,
you and I,
thank God Karen was there.
Absolutely. And you and I got a lot of angry email about that. Some of which people were getting angry with me about shit you said. And I was like, God damn it. I didn't even say that.
That was awesome. Just kidding.
No, it wasn't. It was really upsetting to me as well. I mean, to the point where I considered quitting the show myself after that. And honest, I will be honest here that it wasn't until you said you wouldn't be able to do it and you asked me to be the host for all episodes, I was about ready to say I'm not doing it this year because it's very, very difficult. Exactly what you just said. I can say the exact same thing. It is very difficult to cover this show. It's a fucking minefield, people, whether you realize it or not. And we are throwing ourselves out there talking about these things and exposing ourselves.
Well, I just want to make it clear that it was tough, but I didn't see it as a minefield. I actually tried to treat it as an opportunity to connect and you know, take a situation where you have someone really offended and just show them some vulnerability and respect and see if it's returned. And it was in every case, which is awesome, because I just had a situation on Walking Dead Cast where I tried that same thing and that vulnerability was not returned. I just got some accusations. So with Game of Thrones, I felt incredibly rewarded by how all those, me personally, how all those turned out. And that actually almost makes me want to dive in again. And I really, really do hope to come back next year in a fuller capacity. And maybe that'll be the final season. So I'd like to be much more involved.
I don't know if they're talking about season 8 already.
Yeah, maybe so.
Season 8, so it's possible.
But we'll see. But, you know, I also, though, do agree with you that it's not nice to just come a full-throated attack. You know, that's not
no, I, and that's anything. The thing. You took yeah. that, you know, you did take a different approach to all of that than I did. My approach was tend to be, I'm just not going to respond. I mean, I responded to a couple of things. But if somebody really comes at me with a whole lot of anger that I feel is totally misplaced, I don't even know where to begin with that. Mm-hmm. I really, really don't. I'm sorry that people felt offended. You know, that was not the intention in any way, shape, or form. And I think if anybody knew either one of us, you would realize that was not where right. we should have landed.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just weird. I mean, that was a really hard episode to talk about.
It was.
And people focused on one very, you know, this, I haven't complained about this with many things. This just came up with The Walking Dead, the season finale. Jason, you and I talked about this quite a bit, where it is unfortunate sometimes something happens that pisses people off so much that you ignore the rest of what came before. Mm-hmm. The similar thing that happened with that episode. And I was actually laughing looking at something on a wiki about Game of Thrones and talked about season 5. And it showed the critical response of every episode. And it was pretty much 190, 100, 100, 90. Got to episode 6. 40%. And then it bounced back up to like 90 and 100.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. The writers got a lot of flack last year, and I wonder how much, whether they'll change the show this year. I have a feeling the issues won't be quite as uncomfortable this year, I bet you, but we'll see.
I hope not, because I'm going to be on every one of these, so I really hope not.
It's going to be...
Let's get off this. Grace, shit, what's your number one?
My number one is just Cersei's entire arc this season.
Ooh, nice.
You know, I thought she had a tremendous season. I love how the premiere episode, you know, it kind of like kicks things off with the flashback of her as a young girl and hearing the whole prophecy about, you know, how all her kids would die and all this bad news, and that you see is actually coming true at this point. And you know, just her whole stubbornness and her refusal to, you know, like to run the small council in an appropriate way. And she's just trying to just pit every, or just get her way. She's like trying to make religion as a weapon, and that whole backfire on her. I don't know, just her whole entire arc, to see her smugness and her confidence, and just at the end, you know, just her humiliation, and you just can't help but feel bad for her. You know, I mean, it was amazing, and the acting was amazing, and you know, for me to feel a little bit bad for a character like Cersei, I think is kind of an amazing feat, because even when in the show, I think they've made her more of an empathetic character than in the books. But I was like, yeah, no, I'm not falling for it, or I don't believe it. But I have to say, you know, her walking naked and being humiliated through the streets. Wow. I mean, that was intense and wonderfully done. I don't know. I can't. I think that's all I can say right this second.
Those the women or the woman saying shame, shame.
The shame scepter. Yeah.
Yeah. That just it's like a personification of things that I hate in society where there's so much judgment, you know, and it's like so annoying. So anyway, that was an amazing scene.
It is one of my favorite pictures that I got from San Diego Comic-Con last year was finding somebody who was doing cosplay as the Shame Septa and getting a picture of myself with the a shame thing put over my neck that said shame. And as she's ringing the bell, it was the, kind of the funniest thing. And when I told her, I go, am I supposed to get naked now? And she goes, I won't judge.
Sure.
Shame, shame. Oh God, that was so funny. Not the me at Comic-Con.
I wonder that was not funny. If that scene has been reenacted, I could see it happening at Burning Man.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
Or maybe it would be the reverse, like instead of a dour looking woman, it would be, what's the opposite of shame? Joy.
Pride.
Or pride. Pride.
Yeah.
No, that was, you know,
that
Cersei,
is a pretty bad idea.
Cersei really did have a very, she had a great arc that season, and her misstep with aligning with the High Sparrow and thinking that that would work out for her. No, not so much. So,
it was fun to watch her plans crumble.
It really was. And Cersei's arc was fantastic that season. It really was. So,
yeah. And I can't wait to see how she handles it now that she's back.
Mm. Yeah, me too. So that's,
I don't think she's going to have learned her lesson. We'll see.
I doubt it. We'll see. Well, that's a great number one. My number one, we've already covered, which was the Battle of Hardhome.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, done and done. Anything else you want to bring up about season five that was fantabulous?
What do you guys think overall, looking back at it, do you feel like, yeah, that was a good season, or it was good, but there were flaws, or, you know, what's your base feeling about it?
You already touched on it. I thought it was a very good season with a couple of very, very difficult things to talk about.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm.
And
but overall,
Dorne.
Dorne had some serious missteps. Yeah, no, Dorne had some serious missteps. I think it was somewhat of an uneven season.
Mm-hmm.
With some really great highlights.
With some super great highlights, yeah. So it's hard. I just look at it as a whole, I think it was a good season because there were so many great, great moments. But yeah, there were some moments that were hard to watch too.
I think it was an important yet transitory season that we're going to get to something meatier as we move along. I think we needed to set up some new scenarios. Mm-hmm. I think after the Red Wedding, and then the death of Joffrey in season four and these kinds of things, it was something. Or that happened in five. Joffrey died.
No, that was four.
Mm-hmm. That was four. That
yes.
Things have shifted. Things have changed. And I think this was a very transitory season that maybe now with season six, we're going to get a different feel to it altogether.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch some of the season six trailer today, and I have to say I'm very excited.
Any last thoughts on season five?
I think I've covered what I wanted to cover.
Yeah.
Okay, groovy.
I mean, we could talk about it for another 3 hours if we wanted to, but that's good.
Well, let's not do that. We're going to have 10 episodes to talk about here very soon. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and chat about any news about Game of Thrones.
Okay, I had a few items that I prepped. So Game of Thrones season 6 premiered in Hollywood last Sunday. They had a showing, and it was the only chance for the press to see any early screener because, as you might remember, last year, the first, I think, four episodes leaked.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're like, nope, not anymore. But a bunch of reporters saw this one. They weren't supposed to spoil any details until it premieres on HBO, but they gave general impressions. I'm going to say a couple of things that are not at all spoilery, but they really whet your appetite, I think. So Entertainment Weekly said, quote, even hardcore fans full of speculation about the new season won't see some twist coming, which I thought was awesome. And then the Hollywood Reporter said that, quote, numerous moments throughout the episode elicited gasps of shock, unexpected and uncomfortable laughter, and long moments of stunned silence.
Ooh.
Enough with the uncomfortable. Seriously, enough.
Oh, come on. It wouldn't be Game of Thrones without some discomfort. I know.
Discomfort. No, it's so true. It's so true.
Next, at that same premiere event, the showrunners David Benioff and Dan Weiss confirmed rumors that Barack Obama wanted and will get episodes ahead of their debut on HBO.
I love that. I saw that today, actually. I was like, well, when you're the president, you can get what you want.
Good to be the king.
Nice.
Yep.
Bastard. Okay. Game of Thrones has released an expanded version of its opening credits with a 360-degree view. So it's one of those things where if you have your iPhone and you move it around, it's like the opening credits, but you get to see whatever model you pointed at. Mm. I tried it out. It was disorienting, but apparently you can see a lot of Easter eggs. Okay, and you get to see under the skirt of the Titan of Braavos.
Nice.
So was that worth it?
No, it was underwhelming.
Oh, that's sad. The Titan is underwhelming.
Finally, George R.R. Martin is working, as most of you might know, on the sixth book of what's supposed to be a seven-book series in Game of Thrones.
What are you talking about? That was news from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't know. You're probably right. Most people probably know that. But I just wanted to talk about a little bit about now that we are, as you mentioned, right at the edge of where the last book left off, we're in unknown territory here.
Yeah.
And about that, Martin said, quote, "There will be certain plot twists and reveals in season six of Game of Thrones that have not yet happened in the books." But he also said, the case of Game of Thrones and Song of Ice and Fire is perhaps unique. I can't think of any other instance where the movie or TV show came out as the source material was still being written. So when you ask me, will the show spoil the books? All I can do is say yes and no and mumble once again about the butterfly effect. Those pretty little butterflies have grown into mighty dragons. Some of the spoilers you may encounter in season six may not be spoilers at all because the show and the books have diverged and will continue to do so. I guess I could have just said that last sentence.
Whatever. That's cool. That's great.
They've diverged. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you very much for that news. That is all, you know, basically none of us know what the hell's going to happen in season six.
Which and I'm exciting. Excited.
Yeah. I really am excited about that. The smugness is gone. That was just pure joy. So that's great. And you know, wait, look over there. Do you guys see some ravens?
I don't have my sound thing.
We're putting that in.
I'll stick that in. So why don't we go ahead and take these as we did our tops. Jason, take the first. This is all mostly from Facebook. And thank you guys for, you know, we post a Facebook post about we're recording this. You guys came through. You guys have a lot of things to say.
Mm-hmm. So, I actually have a few more, too, that I found that they put up after we finished our thing. So and some of them had some good comments.
Oh, cool.
When we get to the end, then you can just take it away because I don't have those. But it's
okay.
I just want to say, everybody, by all means, write into our email for the upcoming episodes. Get on Facebook. We now have an official Facebook page for Game of Microphones. Find us. That's the best way to. And we all love interacting on Facebook, I think, more than anything else. So,
yeah, it's good that we have that. I don't know why we didn't have it last year. We wanted to promote Podcastica, I think, but it's facebook.com/GOM podcast because that was all I could fucking get.
I'm pretty sure you can type in Game of Microphones, it'll pop up in a search.
Yeah,
and,
that too.
By all means. And now, as you know, we're not going to be able to read everything that pops up on that, but we'll read many of them, so we'll switch it around. So, Jason, take the first one.
Okay. Ali Pop-Tart says, greetings from Japan. We asked what your highlights were and what you were hoping for. She says, my highlight of season five is definitely the fighting pit scene. When the dragon came, I got goosebumps, literally. There are tons of things I hope for season six. I can't wait to see Tower of Joy. I don't think we're going to see Rhaegar this season, but hopefully next season. So this is some book stuff. I'm a huge Brienne fan, so I hope to see serious battle between Brienne and Ramsay, I guess. Season 4 finale was amazing. Now I want more. I think
season
5.
Season 4 finale, but 5. Maybe season 5, yeah. Grace?
Okay, the next one is from Jennifer Francisco. I have several highlights from season 5. My favorite episode, not just from season 5, but from the entire series, is Hardhome. Love the final battle scenes And the two favorite highlights are, number one, when Jon Snow and the White Walker clash swords with Longclaw. Within those few seconds, the looks on their faces speak volumes. Great acting. Number two, the last few minutes when the Night's King raises everyone from the dead and Jon realizes what they're up against. No doubt.
Oh, for sure. That was great. Mm-hmm. Next one is from Nan Pinheiro Jackson. Any scene with heart emoticon, Jon Snow, heart emoticon. You actually wrote heart emoticon. Okay. Kit Harington. Yes. Okay. I've never been a fan of Melisandre, but please let her bring him back and I'll forgive her anything. Even the death of a child. Seriously. The battle scene of Night's Watch versus Walker's White was epic. Again, another book reader here.
Great.
Very nice. Thank you.
My turn, right?
Yep.
Michelle Campbell McCune says, yay, I'll have to get back to you on specifics. I'm binge watching seasons 1-5 and I've only just started. Season 5 is a blur because it's been so long, but the passing of Jon Snow is a big one. I really hope they address that in the start of episode 1. Also, if Sansa and Reek escape from evil, what's his name?
Ramsay Snow. Yes. Or Ramsay Bolton.
Yes, now Bolton. Okay. This one is from Rima. Highlights, Daenerys riding her dragon. Hardhome. And Hardhome is her second one. And Hopes, Jon Snow.
Now, Rima, I got to say, she's a future. She's going to be a future co-host of this very here podcast. So you'll see. You'll hear her soon enough. And Jason, go ahead and read whatever extras that popped up after we got started here.
Okay. Chris Plunkett says, Hardhome was so good. Watching Brienne kill Stannis, Tyrion and Meereen, Arya's training, and the proper way to complete a season with a cliffhanger, quote, killing a main character. That's a dig at Walking Dead. He says, I'm looking forward to a tighter story. Feels like we've gone everywhere we're going to, as in the world. Let's move some stories forward. Dany sometimes feels like wheels are just spinning. More battles with White Walkers. I hope Sansa takes back Winterfell and maybe we get to meet. And then I took that out because it was a spoiler.
Okay.
Ned Rogers says, in season 6, I want to see Arya kill bad guys, Jon Snow kill bad guys, Jaime get his groove back, and Tyrion being smarter than anyone in the room despite being completely shit-faced.
Fair enough.
Good chance we get that last one. Brianna Cummings says, highlight was seeing Theon / Reek finally snap out of it and escaping with Sansa. We hope. Looking forward to seeing that storyline play out and hoping Sansa becomes even more powerful. Yeah, I was glad to see them together and have him snap out of it, definitely.
Yeah.
Joey Poole says, the death of Shireen still makes me cringe when I think about it, especially after the great scene between her and Stannis. I still cannot believe that happened. The last three episodes were really hard to watch. And finally, Kristen Hallberg says, one of the best things to come out of season 5 was Tyrion's reaction to seeing that the dragons were real. For me, it was like the story really started right then and there with both worlds colliding, which is what we were all waiting for. I can't wait for Sansa to get her revenge for everything she's been through. I want her to chop Ramsay into little pieces and feed his parts to him as he slowly dies.
Nice. All right. So see, for me, the series really started when Tyrion was smushing shit through holes in a box. But, you know, like, to each their own.
She reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah. You too. Amazing. Wow. Very well. Thank you, guys.
In the box? No, I'm just kidding.
That was me cleaning up your shit, damn it. Thank you guys very much. That was fantastic. We appreciate all feedback. So again, feel free, find us on Facebook, like the page. It is a brand new one, all of one day old, I think. So feedback is great. Send in those emails. We're going to love them. Oh, I think we're at the point now where it's time for us to chat about our hopes for what's to come in season 6. Jason, lead us off. Give us one of your hopes. Let's go back and forth on this.
I actually want to, you know, I meant to go back and refresh myself on Bran's story because we haven't seen him for a season.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he's going to be back, but I don't really remember. I know he was with the Three-Eyed Raven, but what was he doing?
So he had gone underground, basically. And you remember Jojen Reed had the most weird death with the skeletons coming up out of the snow and ripping them apart. Kind of a thing. But he's underground with the Green Seer, and the Green Seer is the old man who is up in the roots.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he's going to be teaching him how to be one with the roots, I think. Because all of that gets into the Weirwoods and the ability to... I'm getting into spoiler territory.
There was something about children. Oh, yeah, me too, maybe. But anyway, I, you know, this isn't necessarily a hope, but just what I'm happy about.
We didn't see him last season.
He's coming back, and I'm glad. And this is a really interesting story. And I was actually a little bummed to hear that he was going to be gone for a whole season. So it's going to be cool to have him
come back.
And
now I think he's 30. I don't think he's going to... smokes. Yeah, he's like an old man. He's going to be...
and Bran's not going to rape anybody, so...
No. Bran will do no raping.
Yeah,
chances are slim. Now, Mira Reed is still alive. So Mira Reed is with him under the ground with the old man. Now, maybe the old man's going to do something weird.
Oh, no. Okay, but, boys. Goodness. Oh,
this is Game of Thrones. You never know. You know, come here, little boy. Come amongst my roots. You never know what's going to happen. But no, I'm happy you brought up Bran. I was actually just thinking about that it's like, he's a Stark, and we haven't really heard much of from him. So I'm looking forward to I'm with you on that. I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen with Bran and the Green Seer under the ground in the tree roots with the candlestick in the study. Grace, what is one of your hopes?
Well, I just want to see more of Arya's story. I loved it last season, and I know we're going to get into a big chunk of it this season as well. And it totally excites me. I just want to see it unwind. I want to see what she becomes and what puzzle piece, where is she going to fit in the bigger scheme of things? And it's, to me, just totally exciting.
She's blind.
She's blind.
She's been blinded. What's going to happen with that? That's been a big piece of the promotion for season six too, is now we're getting some images of a white eyed blind Arya. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that as well. I'm surprised this hasn't really come up as much as I thought it would, but Jon Snow's fate. I mean, what's going to happen? Big hope. So I,
what do you want? What would you want the most?
Well, I want him to come back to life in some way and lead everybody into victorious battle against the White Walkers and become king and ride a dragon and all these really Daenerys. Cool things. And marry Daenerys. Maybe not. That could be a little weird.
Hey, they're Targaryens. Oh, well, we don't know that.
This is true. Well, I think he is. No, I do think he's a Targaryen, but that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. So, but Jon Snow's fate. I can't wait to see that resolved. Jason.
I do want to make it clear. I don't know that, by the way. It's just speculation.
No, none of us do.
Totally speculation.
Yeah. We had a scene where Littlefinger asked Cersei if he could lead the Knights of the Vale to go fight the Boltons, and if he drove them out, could he be Warden of the North? And then I don't think anything ever happened with that, right?
You want to see Baelish as King of the North?
Yeah, actually, that wasn't where I was going with this, but why
but
not?
You kind of do.
That's exactly where you're going with that. Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
I can see that. Baelish, you're right, Littlefinger. We haven't even brought him up at all. Here's a guy who's pulling a lot of strings.
He is.
I've honestly forgotten how many strings that dude's pulling, but he's got a lot going on.
Ever since the beginning, too.
Varys,
too. I mean,
there are three people that George Martin said, and in the books, they are specific POVs. Every chapter is a POV from a different character. And Martin has always said there are three characters that will never have a POV, and that is Littlefinger, Varys, and Howland Reed, because their POV, you would know too much.
Mm.
And I love that. Knowing whatever's going on in Littlefinger's mind,
he knows a lot,
would be too much for us to know. So, wine. I'm drinking some Dornish Gold here, so you know.
Dornish.
Yes, Dornish. Slurring. No, not really. Okay, Grace, let me hear one of your hopes for season 6.
Well, I think we kind of covered most of mine. Do you have some more things? I mean, I was keeping it pretty general.
Out. Come on.
I don't know. I want to see the dragons again. I want to see all the dragons out of captivity. I want to see other people riding them besides Daenerys. I want them out and big and powerful and just creating mayhem.
What about Dany and the Dothraki?
I don't think that's going to go good. I don't think that's going to go well for Dany for a while, probably.
I think it's
going to
go very poorly for Dany.
Maybe not. I mean, she's learned some Dothraki ways. Maybe she can use that.
I don't think they're going to recognize her as Khaleesi. I mean, you know, Khal Drogo, he's been dead for quite some time. I don't think they're going to, they don't give a shit.
I think they still need to tread some water for a while. I don't think they're quite ready to put Daenerys on the throne. So they have to tread some water. So they're going to stall her story more and hopefully it'll be interesting though. Cause I don't know.
Okay. That would be a change is if her story didn't feel like it was stalling. And stuff happened.
That's what I'm hoping to see.
That was exactly. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Some forward momentum on Dany's story. That's what I'm hoping to see. Okay, go ahead.
Here's one of my hopes.
Okay.
More Greyjoys. Mm-hmm. I want some more Greyjoys, man. I want to see Yara come back. Wait. It's not Yara in the show, is it?
Yes.
It is Yara in the show. It's Asha in the book. Okay, that's sorry. That really screwed me up. So Yara Greyjoy, I want to see more of her. I want to see more of Balon Greyjoy. I want to see some Viserion. I want to see some Euron. Y'all don't know who the hell I'm talking about, but I have a feeling we're going to
I do, and
see
I don't agree.
See,
but
I know you do. I'm talking general. I really want to see some more Greyjoy action. I love these guys. They're like the Vikings of Westeros. We have seen so little of them except for Theon / Reek / oh my God, that poor guy doesn't even have a dick anymore. So that's one of my big hopes. More really? Greyjoys. I hope we get some more of those. Do you guys want to go through another round of this or you're done?
I got a few, but I can just
please,
rifle
no, no,
through
no.
them.
Spit it out. Rounds? I got some as well.
Keep doing rounds? Okay. So this is pretty simple. I love the White Walkers. I want to see more of the White Walkers.
Ooh,
but
yes,
I love that they balance it in a way where they don't diminish their... the feeling of threateningness and mystery. So I want both of those. I still want them to feel mysterious and chilling, but I want to see them more.
Okay. I want Sam and Gilly's story to continue. I want to see what they're up to.
Sam is on his way to become a Meister.
I want to see some of that.
Yes,
I don't want them to drop that story.
Me neither.
They're a fun couple and give some heart to the story. So I hope they don't drop them. I want to see a little more.
I want him to learn a bunch of arcane shit that blows his mind and changes him forever.
Agreed. I will say, what's going to happen in Meereen? Tyrion, Jorah, Grey Worm,
mm-hmm.
Missandei. They're all there without their leader fighting. There was chaos when Dany took off. What's going to happen in Meereen?
I think, did Jorah and that beefy guy... the assassin that was her boyfriend.
Oh, Dario.
Yeah, didn't
Dario
they go
Novaris.
Off looking for her? Or not?
Did they? I don't even remember.
I don't know.
I want to say they left.
Okay, then maybe they did. I don't recall.
But sorry. Yeah, so it's just the people that Mr.
But
Blog mentioned
will
remaining.
Will Tyrion try to stay in control?
I think so. I think maybe that's why
he's
there.
He's good at leading. He is good at leading. Mm-hmm. He was a great hand of the king.
Mm-hmm. Well, if he does, I want to see him have some struggles, but be successful ultimately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I always want to see more Tyrion. So,
okay. Mm-hmm. Jason, do you have any other loose threads?
My last one is a counterpoint to your wanting Jon Snow to be brought back to life and lead them to victory in battle. I would almost equally love it if he became a White Walker and was the main villain of the show from now on. I know most
cool
people
too.
Don't agree, but
no, actually, what I wrote down was Jon Snow's fate. So it could be anything. I just want to see more. In one way or the other. Yeah, or Jon Snow in some way.
Very good.
Well, all right. I think that wraps up our hopes for what we hope to see. Grace. Give us a little info on what's up next for Game of Thrones.
Okay, next time on Game of Thrones, season 6, episode 1 is called The Red Woman. So I wonder who that's going to center around.
Yeah. Who do you think that's about?
But it's written by the series co-creators, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, and is directed by Jeremy... pronounce that for me, please.
Padeswa?
Padeswa. Oh, wow. I don't know. Among other things, Padeswa won an Emmy for directing season 5, episode 6, Unbowed, Unbent, Unbroken.
Ah, fuck him. Really?
He directed the one before that, too.
I'm just going to apologize in advance for whatever happens in that, whatever we say.
That was not your favorite episode, eh? Okay, let's see. There's some general plot descriptions on this episode, but they're kind of spoilery. But the IMDb blurb is Jon Snow is dead. Daenerys meets strong man. Cersei sees her daughter again.
Wait,
doesn't sounds a little happier than it probably will end up being.
Wait a minute, how does she see her daughter again? Her daughter died.
Well, because Jaime's going to bring the dead body back to her.
Oh my lord.
Well, maybe maybe Qyburn will do his work on her as well.
No, I don't even want to think about that. Oh my lord, no. Jesus.
The rest of that stuff, by the way, just forget about it. Do you have more?
Nope.
No, you don't, do you? I'm sorry. Nope. Ignore what I'm saying right now.
Okay, red pen.
Well, no, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I do love the vague nature of all of that.
Insanely
I think
vague
and
nature.
I'm glad you didn't get into the spoilery stuff.
Yeah.
I really don't know what's going to happen as the season starts.
That is so much fun.
And I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm really looking. It's one of those things that, you know, the bitch about Game of Thrones, we get 10 weeks of Game of Thrones. Then we have 42 weeks to wait for Game of Thrones to come back.
Yeah.
And we have very much been in the midst of those 42 weeks. So it's going to be a great pleasure to have this show back for all of its difficulties, for all of its ugliness. And it is an ugly, hateful show. It really is. We love it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to dig into this with our well, as you will hear in a moment, our revolving cast of co-hosts.
Expanding and revolving cast.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a lot of fun, folks. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this. Guys, you ready to close this one out?
I am.
Yep.
All right. If you would like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-Joffrey.
I still love that.
Has anyone actually ever called that? I challenge you. Call that number.
I think we might have had a couple of calls on it.
Yeah, I think we have had a couple. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Two. But by all means, folks, give us a call. Vent your outrage. Say what you must say.
If you want to write in, however, you can also email at game@podcastica.com.
And like we said earlier, we now have a dedicated Facebook page at facebook.com/GOM podcast. And we encourage you to check it out.
And be sure to check out the other great podcasts in our growing network at podcastica.com. And I got to give special props to Once Upon a Podcast. That's the podcast that covers Once Upon a Time. With Brittany and Amanda, they just celebrated their 100th episode.
Yay!
So,
congrats,
kudos
guys.
To you guys on that. Yeah, good stuff.
Okay, join us next week for Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 1, The Red Woman, with me and Mr. Blog.
Yeah, so as we've been teasing this whole time, we do have a different sort of structure for Game of Microphones this year. This time around, I'm sorry, folks, but you're stuck with me as your host for all 10 episodes.
Oh, no!
I will be hosting every episode, but there will be a revolving cast of co-hosts. In general, it should be just me and one other person, sometimes me and two other people. We've got a couple of longtime listeners of the Walking Dead cast, such as and who've become friends now, such as Rima, who I mentioned earlier, and Jen, somebody that we adore that we've met over the last few years. Also, of course, David, who was on last season, Mr. Karen, Doug, a friend of ours as well, a former guest on the Walking Dead cast, Rem from the Sci-Fi Movie Podcast, and hopefully both at least at different times, Melissa and Duncan from the Fear of the Walking Dead cast. And if, for those of you who don't know, Melissa is Clementine from the Telltale Walking Dead game. And Harry from Podcast Junkies. So we have a very wide, diverse group of people who are going to be joining me on this.
Did you mention Cindy?
I did not mention Cindy. And oh my God, Cindy. My apologies. Hi, Cindy. My apologies.
Petey!
She is from Walker Stalker Con, another friend of all three of ours. Good who fun. Is
fantastic.
Cindy, fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to chat with her about some Game of Thrones. And also this season, there will be no book talk because
there's no book.
There's no book to talk about with this one. Save a few little minor things, but not worth it. So we're not going to be doing that this season. So it's going to be a different game of microphones. I really hope you guys enjoy this. But until then, that's our show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.